Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly show looking at what's new and what's going on in the technology world from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, we'd love to hear from you, so please do. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week we'll be hearing all about We Assist, the new service from the team behind the WeWalk smart cane. RNIB's Sightless Combat runs down some of the accessible video games you could play over the festive period. And we'll be hearing about some of the seasonal offers available from the RNIB shop. Yeah, it's that time of year, all very Christmassy. Bit of a quiet one this week. Just Hubert Pavalkovic joining me, just the two of us. What's going on?
Yeah, what have we done? Goodness me, must have upset people.
Yeah, clearly. So, how are you doing? What's going on with you this week? Anything new?
Well, my new toys arrived, this being my Orbit Writer. It's a very good device, but what I didn't realise is how complex a Bluetooth keyboard can be. It's a great device. However, there's two different protocols that this keyboard can be used with. One protocol communicates with the actual screen reader itself, which is kind of making the Orbit Writer act like a Braille display just for Braille input, which allows you to use the Orbit Writer with the standard Braille keyboard commands for various shortcuts like spacebar.1 to flick left, spacebar.3 to flick right. And that way you can connect it up to 5 devices and switch between them. No ultimate laziness, however, because in order to actually connect the Orbit Writer to the device every time, you need to wake up the device. So you need to get out of bed, unlock your phone, get back into bed and use the keyboard.
Oh, okay.
That's a bit strange. But if you set it to another protocol, which then allows it to act as if it's a QWERTY keyboard, you can then, for example, wake up the device. But then the problem is you've got a device with considerably less keys than a QWERTY keyboard acting as a QWERTY keyboard. So it has a key combination, a dot combination for every key on the QWERTY keyboard. Which you need to try and memorize, which makes things interesting. I've never seen a Bluetooth keyboard of any kind like that.
Right. So hang on. So if you've got it in like the keyboard mode, what does that actually mean? Does that mean you can't Braille?
You can Braille, but you can also basically use it as a QWERTY keyboard. So it has different dot combinations for different keys on the keyboard. So for example, the shift key is .7, so if you want to type capital A, you press 1 and set .1 and 7 for that example. But the limitation is, to my understanding, if you have it in that mode, you can't actually then connect it and switch between 5 devices. You can only switch between 5 devices if you have it using the screen reader protocol that talks to the screen reader rather than the operating system. It's very strange. I'm still exploring it, so more things might come to light. But it's very interesting because I do prefer this keyboard in general. It's much more comfortable to use. But this is something I've not expected when I was reading the instruction manual. I was like, hang on, this is really odd.
Okay, I'm not entirely sure what to make of that. I take it you can still use your... Because it's got a little navigation pad, hasn't it? Like with your up, down, left and right.
Yes, it does. Mm. And they still, in both modes, they still act the same. So in both modes, they represent the relevant 4 arrow keys and the enter/select key. So that part doesn't change. And even the combinations for the Braille letters don't technically change. But how you navigate and control the device does change between whichever protocol you select.
Okay. Well, I mean, as I said before, I've asked Santa for an Orbit Writer, so I'm glad you mentioned this. I'll definitely check out the... I don't normally do instructions, but I'll definitely check those out and try and get...
I'm glad I did, because I don't usually. I just press buttons and hope for the best, but I thought this time I'll actually read the manual, and I'm glad I did, because there's a lot to remember, but I think the device is personally quite worth it, because typing on it just feels so smooth and just navigating the device feels so nice. And if you do want to use it in the Braille mode but don't want to kind of come to your device to unlock it, there's a trick I found where I ask Siri what the weather is, and while it tells me the forecast, it's engaged for long enough that the keyboard will automatically connect by the time it's finished reading the weather forecast. So ultimate laziness can still be achieved.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that's all right then.
With a workaround.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing I like about the Herbal One. You can just start pressing buttons and it will wake it up. So yeah, ultimate laziness. I'm always there for that. Well, I want to give a shout out to Be My Eyes this week, once again, because they have won the Apple App Store Editors Award for cultural impact. I've not heard of these before, but I'll just quickly read this this little script here. This is from the announcement on Apple Viz. And by the way, they do make it very clear in here. There's no secret that Apple Viz, well, Be My Eyes is kind of a parent company. So, you know, this isn't just a kind of plug thing that they're doing for themselves. So this here, this announcement here says, chosen from a list of 45 finalists by Apple's App Store editors, the 2025 App Store Awards recognize 17 apps and games for their providing exceptional innovation, user experience, and design. Award categories include App of the Year for all of the Apple products, so Mac, iPhone, iPad, Watch, Vision Pro, Game of the Year for all the same platforms, and a recognition for cultural impact, which is what Be My Eyes has won, along with Art of Fauna, which is apparently an accessible puzzle game. But it's just nice to see, I mean, Be My Eyes have been doing loads of work this year, but just over the years as well. And it's just nice to see that being recognised by Apple, I think, because there's millions of apps on the App Store and it can kind of just feel like it's just in a void, I suppose, you know, especially someone that's pretty niche. So, yeah, well done to Be My Eyes on that one.
And quite a lot of these apps as well aren't really talked about in the mainstream. So, you know, awarding this to Be My Eyes gives them more recognition and more people will hopefully see what is out there to, you know, help blind and partially sighted people. And Be My Eyes is really good, whether you choose to use it to call a volunteer, whether you use it to use Be My AI to describe photos or things. There's, you know, there's so many options and so many things that they provide. So it's, I agree, it's really good to have them recognized. Now, Art of Fauna is actually a really good game, and actually Sightless Combat will be telling us more about it later on in this week's show, which will make it really interesting. It sounds like quite a fun game, especially that I used to be a big lover of animal trivia when I was a child. I used to love watching these animal programs and then kind of mention various bits of trivia to people. So it's quite an interesting game, but it is just nice to be able to see these projects recognized in the mainstream where, you know, sometimes maybe they didn't get as much recognition as they deserved.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, especially with Be My Eyes. It's bringing it into the mainstream for a mainstream audience and for other blind people. I mean, I was speaking to someone the other day. I was on my way to work, and you know how you do, like, we were sat on the train and the train was delayed, which is, you know, nothing new there. So we were just sat there, and someone saw me using my phone with VoiceOver and started chatting to me, and they said, oh, my dad's, are you using VoiceOver? And I said, yeah. And they said, you know, my dad's starting to lose his vision, and, you know, he's really struggling, and we've turned on VoiceOver for him. He's got to grips with that and he's loving it, but, you know, he feels like he's missing out on pictures nowadays. And so, you know, I said to this person, oh, has he tried Be My Eyes? And she kind of said, what's that? And, you know, he'd been losing his sight over the last few years. And apparently her dad was quite up on his tech. You know, he knew what he was doing, but he just hadn't. There's still so many people, if you don't know what's out there, then it's a classic thing of you don't know what you don't know, you know. So hopefully things like this, it's not just about getting more volunteers, which they've no shortage of. Hopefully it brings it to more blind people as well who might benefit from it.
Absolutely, because there's so many features, because I know some people say, oh, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking to the volunteer, which is fair enough. It's not everyone does. But the thing is, there's so many other services. There's Be My AI to help with photos. There's the service directory, which recently has, you know, the BT and Tesco partnerships. There's so many other ways that Be My AI can help you out. I've used it frequently with Microsoft's Disability Answer Desk, where my Windows laptop went basically silent and refused to talk to me with any screen reader. I think once I somehow got myself into the BIOS, and a Microsoft Answer Desk were very helpful to take me out of it before I ruined something on a permanent basis.
Well, there you go. A brilliant bit of recognition from Be My Eyes there from Apple. So huge congratulations to them. Well, a nice Christmassy week this week. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Now, some exciting technology news for you now, courtesy of WeWork, to tell us some more about a new service that's available to beta test right now. From WeWork, I'm joined by Dr. Jean-Marc Fogali from WeWork as a Chief Innovation Officer. Jean-Marc, thank you for joining us.
No, thanks for having me on the show, Hubert. Yeah, this is very exciting. It's a new development, again, with WeAssist being co-designed with the RNIB, so it's great to finally be able to talk about it on the show and what it could do for our visually impaired community.
Well, before we get into the beta testing part of it, let's find out more about WeAssist. What is it exactly?
So many people will know WeWalk for being a smart cane company, and we are. So, you know, we created the WeWalk smart cane, which has upper body obstacle detection and navigation. But time and time again, we heard from our lovely WeWalk users that they wanted just a little bit more. For instance, to read documents, to tell what items are on a store shelf, because we know mobility is only one part of the puzzle, right? Once you get to the place you want to go, you have to find the right door number, you might want to find a keyhole, you have to find the item on that shelf. And so we wanted to address that. And that's where the idea behind WeAssist came, where once you get to a place where your smart cane can't necessarily help, like, again, finding items on a store shelf, you simply take out your WeWalk app, you click a button, and you'll be connected to one of our professionally trained sighted guides who will use your smartphone's camera. They can talk to you, you can talk to them, and they can then sort of guide you around and help you do whatever you want to do. And the best part of this is you don't need a smart cane to access this experience. You can simply just download the WeWalk app, and you'll be able to connect to an agent with a click of a button, whether or not you have a smart cane available. The nice thing is it's all within the WeWalk app, so you won't have to download any new apps. If you're an existing WeWalk user, it all sort of fits in within WeWalk's accessible interfaces. So it's, you know, screen reader, voiceover, and low vision compatible as well. And the best part is you can sort of continue your WeWalk journey with the help of the WeAssist agent as well, because they can sort of find your location as well. They can help you out on your journey, integrated into our existing navigation system too.
Now let's talk about availability. So this is currently available to beta test. Can you give us a bit more information on the beta testing process?
Of course. So at WeWalk, we never like to just roll out things without testing them. We always like to give our community a taste of the products. And we did the exact same thing with WeAssist. So WeAssist initially was in trial. So we had sort of, again, co-designed it with the RNIB, the agent training materials, how the system should operate. And we finally came to a point where we thought, look, you know what? I think we're ready to kind of roll this out and to see what people think about it. And that's exactly what we're doing now. So from about middle of October till the end of this year, so the end of December, we're offering the WeAssist service free of charge for people. You simply have to download the WeWalk app. Again, you click the button and you'll be connected for free. And the reason we're doing this is, again, we just want to make sure we can capture as much feedback, but we also want to learn how users are using the service. So again, what are the most common use cases? Is it within supermarkets and shopping malls, or is it potentially within airports and train stations? Again, we want to sort of understand and capture that feedback and deliver a better service for our users as well. So it's an investment from our company, of course. You know, we've recruited the agents already, but this is our way of kind of giving back to the community and saying, test the service, give us your feedback. We really want to do our best for you.
So what are the limitations of the beta testing? Are there any kind of time windows or any other limits that users need to be aware of if they want to take part in the beta testing program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the current limits are, we're currently only providing the service on working days, so business days, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. UK time. Now, of course, when the service comes out of beta, hopefully next year, that timing will expand. You know, we're even aiming for things like a 24-hour service. But just for now, since we're sort of offering a limited trial, it's again weekdays from 8 to 6 p.m.
Just a quick question when it comes to, you know, once the service is finally out, do you have ideas of kind of, will this service be free? Will there be a charge for it? And if so, how the pricing models will work?
Yeah. So this is exactly why this beta testing is so important. It helps us gauge the demand. Now, one thing I can assure you is Again, because we're a company of people with visual impairments, we use our own services. We genuinely want to make these services as affordable as possible. Again, we very much so are part of the community. And so ideally for us, we would go to venue operators and they would cover the cost for visually impaired people, meaning that users won't have to pay anything to access the service for certain tasks like certain supermarkets. But until then, the only way we can convince those operators is again by running trials like this, capturing the user feedback, assessing the demand. And that's why this is just so important for us. So we're urging people to make calls because, with every call, not only does it help us build a better system, but it potentially even helps us make the system more affordable in the long run as well.
And finally, just to remind people, if they would like to give this a try and provide you some feedback, how can they do both of these things?
Yeah, really, really simple. Whether you're an iOS or Android, you simply go to your Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, you download the WeWalk app, you sign up, which just takes a matter of seconds, and then within the app, you'll find a tab at the very bottom called We Assist. You click that tab, and then you click the Connect to an Agent button. For the first time, you'll just have to, provide camera and microphone access so the system will work. But once you do that, you should be able to click the button, and then just like a standard video call, you'll be able to connect to an agent through, again, a one-way video, two-way audio stream. So really, really simple. And we don't put any restrictions for the amount of calls or the duration of each call users want to use. I mean, we were testing the system, for instance, on the underground and at airports, and people were on the call for, well over 2 hours. So we'd recommend, just go crazy, have some fun, download the app and just push the system to its limits and let's find out how people can use it. But the only thing I urge people to remember is just remember this is still a beta. So it's not a 100% perfect system, but day by day it's getting better thanks to the feedback of our users.
And how can people submit feedback about their experience of the service?
It's actually really easy. So right after a call, you'll be prompted to let us know if you had a good call or not a good call. And you'll also get a text box to sort of leave us some comments and feedback as well. And our agents are genuinely like really lovely people. And again, we work with them, day to day, and they're very open to feedback as well. So during a call, if anyone has any thoughts or would like the service to be improved, they can literally just say that directly to the agents, and that'll then reach us, and we can sort of improve the system that way. And of course, we have our usual online channels as well. So you can reach out to us on any of our social media channels, on our email, info@wewalk.io. So we're all ears on this. Any way that you feel comfortable, let us know. But again, don't hesitate to just let the agent know you're on the call with them. If you feel they're doing a good job, let them know. They'd love to hear that positive feedback. And if you feel it could be better, then again, just please do let them know.
And I'm sure we'll catch up with you in 2026 more about this. But for now, Dr. Jean-Marc Fugali, Chief Innovation Officer at WeWalk, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Hubert. And we're looking forward to everyone's calls. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Recently on RNIB Tech Talk, you might have heard me mentioning an app called Nearly Departed. No, it's nothing morbid. It's to do with trains, in fact. So to give you a bit of background, if you didn't hear me mentioning it, I've had a situation where I was running on a late train. It was running late and I couldn't figure out what time it was arriving. So I went to do my usual thing. I open train line. I tap on my train finder, because it has a feature called Find My Train, where it locates your train based on your location. You can tap on it and you can see the list of times and stops. Or rather, you could, because now you get a shiny, what I presume is a gorgeous looking map. However, not much use to people who have sight loss or who are totally blind and therefore reliant on screen readers, because you don't see the times and stops. So how do you tackle this issue? Well, a friend of mine recently recommended Nearly Departed, and it solves that issue plus adds a few extra things on top, as you will find out today. So let's just dive straight into it and show it to you. This is an iPhone app. I'm not sure if it's available on Android, but definitely available on iOS, and I'll show it to you now.
Nearly Departed. Stopping Braille screen input. Opening Nearly Departed. Nearly Departed. All routes. Back button.
So a few things to note with this app. It is for tracking trains only. So you can't look up or plan journeys with this app. Neither can you buy tickets through it. This is for tracking trains only. And only direct routes. So if your train stops somewhere along the route and you want to track it up to that point, not really possible. But you can track trains from A to B. So, for example, for me, it'll be from Bedford to Brighton or vice versa. So let me show you what the screen has. The app is very basic, which is excellent. There's no kind of cluttered interfaces or anything like that.
Arrivals. All routes. Back button. Arrivals. Action menu. Alerts. Heading. Trains running between London St Pancras International and London Bridge / Elephant and Castle may be cancelled, delayed by up to 60 minutes or revised. Latest information can be found in Status and Disruptions. Link. Full stop.
So, you already get some cheery news upon opening the app sometimes, unfortunately.
Trains running between Haywards Heath and Brighton may be cancelled, delayed by up to 30 minutes or revised. Latest information can be found in Status and Disruptions. Link. Full stop.
Now, if you are wondering why it's reading me that, it's because these are the routes that I kind of use a lot.
Arrivals at Bedford. Heading.
So, it's showing me arrivals at Bedford. Now, I'll tell you why this is doing it that way. Because in the morning, I look at trains going to Brighton, so trains departing Bedford. And in the afternoon, which is when I'm recording this, the app automatically reverses this, assuming that you want to go home, which is correct. So I will now show you, basically, I want to find my train. And the good thing is it will list the scheduled arrival time, and it will also then list the delayed time if that is the case. So I know my train, for example, gets in at 18:26, and I will attempt to find it, and I'll show you what happens from there.
18:26 from Three Bridges, on time, button.
So there we go, that train is listed as on time. That is my train. That is a train I like to take. Now, I'm going to double tap on that.
Select nearly departed. This service has not yet departed Three Bridges. Service to Bedford from Three Bridges, heading 16:26. Three Bridges, on time, platform 16:32, Gatwick Airport.
And I can therefore look at all the stops and the times it's supposed to arrive. Now, because this service hasn't actually yet departed, there's not much I'm going to get from here apart from the scheduled times and stops, which is still useful to know. But the point is, you can't get much use out of this. But let me see what else you've got on the screen if I go backwards.
16. Service to bed. This service has not yet departed Three Bridges. Follow this service. Switch button off.
This is what I wanted to show you. So what happens with this? If I turned this to on and the service is moving, it will pull it up on my lock screen and I'll be able to see it as a live activity. And on my lock screen, I will then get the arrival time, as in the actual arrival time as opposed to scheduled arrival time. I will also get the platform the train's arriving on. And if there are delays, I'll get told the reason of said delays. So the good thing is I can then access that on my phone lock screen. I can also access it on my Apple Watch. The other useful thing, and I only found this out yesterday when I was trying this app on my journey home from work, this app also gives you a notification, or at least it did in my case, when I was about three minutes before my train station. I got a notification where it said, "Your train will arrive at Bedford in a few minutes." Which is quite useful. I mean, most trains do have train announcements on them, do have a passenger information system, so it's useful and it isn't. However, it's good to have it there just in case the passenger information system breaks on the train.
Arrivals at Bedford. Back button. 18:20.
So I'll go back. It shows me arrivals at Bedford, but I'm going to go back a screen again.
All routes. Back button. Edit button, edit button.
Now here you can actually mark your favorite direct services. So let me show you what the screen looks like.
Nearly departed. Routes, heading. Arrivals at Bedford, button. Actions available.
So you've got arrivals at Bedford and you can...
delete, activate, default.
You can delete or activate each of the routes.
Departures from Bedford, button.
Look at departures from Bedford. So you've got the route in both directions, which is quite useful. So you can mark up your favourite stations that you use a lot, and you can look at their departures and arrivals, which is quite handy.
Add another route, button.
And you can add as many as you like.
Followed services, heading.
Then you've got followed services.
16:26, to Bedford from Three Bridges, button. Actions available.
And I can just as easily follow this service here and be able to tap on it and see what's going on. And if I wanted to...
Unfollow. Activate. Default.
I can unfollow it as well.
Favorite services. Heading. Edit favorites. Information and settings. Button. Favorite services. Heading.
So you can actually add favorite services.
Edit favorites. Button.
I'm not sure how to do that just yet because I've not found a button as to how to do that. But that is also quite useful because then you can easily track them. So if there's trains you take on a regular basis, like I do, it's always something that I like to be able to follow.
Information and settings. Button.
Then you've got a few settings.
Information and settings. Button.
And that's it on the screen. So it's quite a simple app, to be honest. Let's show you what's in settings.
About. Button.
You've got about.
What's new. Button.
Got the what's new section.
Help. Button. Send feedback. Rate in App Store. Premium subscription. Heading.
Now, you do have a premium subscription. I've not actually needed this, but we'll see if it tells us what it is.
Go premium. Two people have gone premium this week. Button. App settings. Heading. Use location services. Nearly departed can use your app setting.
So it doesn't tell us what it really has. Let's see if I tap on it.
Go premium. Hello. Accessibility user. You don't need a subscription to use the app, because traveling by train in the UK is already difficult enough. All the features of this app will be available for you to use, while you have accessibility features enabled.
And this is again what I like, because it recognises you're using accessibility features. I'm not sure if the developer of this app has got accessibility needs themselves, but credit to you, you have done an amazing job so far.
Thank you, and happy travels. Thank you, and happy travels. Hello. Accessibility use. Hello. You don't need a. Hello. Hello. Go premium. Two people.
There we go. So basically, if you've got VoiceOver on, you don't need to pay the subscription.
App settings. Heading. Use location services. Nearly departed can use your location to find your closest station and to determine the direction of travel. Switch button. Off.
I think that's quite useful. I'm quite surprised that this is turned off, actually.
On. Alert. Allow nearly departed. Don't allow while using app. But nearly departed. Use location services.
So that's changed.
Change app icon. But the widget does not have permission to see your location. If you want to use the widget on your home screen, you may want to allow it access to your location in the settings app.
I've not set up a widget for it just yet. It kind of pops up on my lock screen as a live activity, and it works well enough, but always useful to do if you prefer that.
Other settings. Heading. Display. Button. Notifications and live activities. Button. Display. Button.
Let's show you what's here.
Show service operator. Switch button. Off. Show alerts. Show service alerts for stations on your selected route. Switch button. On.
I think that's important.
Show rail replacement service information. Shows information about replacement services on the departures screen. Switch button. On.
Again, very useful to know.
Show reasons for delay or cancellation. All services. Button. Pop-up button.
Again, I like that because it doesn't really help much if you know why it's delayed, but it does allow you to figure out, oh, it seems like a minor issue, or, oh, that sounds like a major issue. I may keep that in mind.
Notifications and live activities. Button. Live activities. Heading. Enable live activities. Switch button. On.
I recommend you keep this on because that's what will allow your train to pop up on the lock screen.
You can start a live activity by following a train service. Dynamic island. Heading. Wide display. Switch button. Off. Enable this to also show station codes in the dynamic island. Changing this setting will take effect when the next service update arrives.
So if you do want to see station codes, i.e. shorter ways of naming train stations, so for example, Bedford is BDM rather than just Bedford, so it saves you typing names. It's not a massive thing, but you can choose to display if you wish.
Live activity notifications. Heading. Alert for service cancellation. Prominent. Button. Alert for changes to the departure platform. Prominent. Button. Alert for imminent arrival. Prominent. But alert for imminent.
I've got all of these set to prominent, which is very useful because then if there are any disruptions, you will know about it.
Notifications, widgets, button.
You've got widget settings. As I haven't got any set up, I'm not really looking there.
Widgets, button.
And that's it for the settings.
Information and settings, but.
And in fact, that is all there is to Nearly Departed. It's a small app, It's a very simple app, and the way I see it, it can be very good to making sure that you can track your trains, especially when delays happen sometimes very suddenly. So it's good to always be able to stay up to date. So that's Nearly Departed. Let us know what you think. Let us know how you find the app or if you have any questions. Their magic email address to do it, as always, is techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
The festive period is here and it can be very busy with cooking, preparing to host, making sure you get in touch with all of your loved ones. But how can tech make your life a bit easier? We're joined today by Claire Maxwell from the RNIB shop to learn about some helpful products. Hi Claire, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, thanks for inviting me along.
So lots of people will be preparing to host and will be cooking different bits and bobs, maybe even just because it's cold outside and they don't want to go out to eat as much. What are some tools that could be helpful in the RNIB shop?
We have a huge range of products in the kitchen, as you would probably imagine. But I'm just going to focus on a few things that we have personally in our own household here as two visually impaired people and just the highlights of those. So we have a talking microwave, which is great because it's really simple. It only has four buttons for controlling it. And it does have the usual settings. You know, it's got a male and female voice. You can get your countdown and your timer, and it's got five different levels for cooking, you know, from defrost up to high cook. And it's also got that door announcement to tell you it's open, which actually, I tell you, is really handy because as two VI people in the kitchen, it's really handy that I don't have to tell my partner when the door's open when I'm getting something out. So that's great for us. And then we also have the talking induction hob. So it's a single induction hob. It's really simple to use. It only has one dial and then two buttons on it. Again, great for us. We have a male and female voice, so we can change it over because I personally prefer a female. I don't like the male voices telling me what to do when I'm cooking. That's just me personally. And it's great. And we use that all the time, obviously, with your sort of pans that are suitable for induction cooking. And then other really helpful things that we have in the kitchen, especially round about this time of year when I'm actually gearing up to cook a huge Christmas dinner for me and my family and extended family. So we've got a talking food thermometer, one of those things that I've just got handy in my drawer that I don't use all year round, but is great. So I know that I'm going to cook our turkey, for example, on Christmas Day thoroughly. So it's really easy to use, just one button. And it can be used to monitor temperatures up to 300 degrees. So it's fantastic. And then other things that I use every day, which are the oven gloves. So we have oven gloves. So they're like five-fingered gloves rather than mitts. And again, personally, I find these are great to use because you get a better grip. I find with an oven mitt, I don't get such a good grip. So I love these. And I have the longer ones. So we have them in two different lengths. I have the ones that go sort of almost up, covering my whole forearm because I'm just worried in case I touch that oven door when I'm lifting something in and out as well. So we have those. And I actually use also other things around our kitchen like bun pons. These are things obviously for all year round, but I've got our appliances marked up with bun pons on our oven. And on the hob, I know it's really simple to use, but I do stick it on there for my partners who can see a little bit as well. And then we have task lighting. So we have a portable light for him because he's got some vision. So when he's chopping or preparing something in the kitchen, he can move that around so he can light up the area where he's chopping vegetables, for example, as well, and see what he's doing as well. And we do have, I know it's an old classic and I'm sure everyone knows about it, but it's the liquid level indicator. Great for making those cups of tea, coffee, whatever, especially in Christmas when I've got multiple cups to pour out. And we've got one of those liquid levels and we've just upgraded ours. It gives you the audio and vibration to tell you when your cup is nearly full and full. And it's just been upgraded so you can actually just put a AAA battery in it, which is fantastic. I used to hate having to change over those coin-sized batteries. So that's just a little bit of an overview of some of the products we've got for kitchen all year round, and you know, things that you might want to use at this time of year.
And how about staying in touch with your close ones and staying connected over the colder months?
So we've got some smartwatches, which are great. So we've got a couple of Synaptic smartwatches. One is a light version, which is just simply a watch, has alarms on it, things like that. And the second version has the capacity to be able to make calls from your watch to monitor your step count and keep a monitor of your heart rate, etc., things like that. And it's got the Synaptic software on there, if people are familiar with that. Great gifts as well as great tech to be able to use them. And then we've also got a range of RealSam phones. So the RealSam phones, we've got three different ones in our range, going from a really simple, you know, no frills phone, which is, and they're all voice activated, I should say. And they are touchscreen and they're built on Android phones, on Samsung phones, but they've got a special software, which is RealSam built in, and they're customized when you receive them. And you can do things like access the RNIB talking newspapers and books, as well as, of course, of making calls or using the magnification that's on there as well. So great for keeping in touch with family. And then we have some really simple no frills Emporia phones as well. Those are large, easy to see, tactile buttons. That they're not speaking phones, they don't talk, they don't have voice activation on them, but they're really good for anyone who's got some vision and, say, large icons on the screen. Then we have a Blindshell 3, which is a great phone. It's tactile, it's got easy to see buttons, it's got speech feedback as well, and it also has a built-in assistant, for a bit like Siri and things like that. So it's called Luna on the Blindshell 3. And what I think is fantastic about this phone in particular is it's got a tandem app, so that a relative can assist from a distance if you need any support to get your phone set up as well and keep you in touch at this time of year, which is super important. And then if you're going out and about and you're brave enough to get out in this freezing cold weather, we've also got the WeWalk smart cane, which is a bit of an upgrade on your standard mobility long cane, for example. It will give you feedback on vibrations, and you also get the audio through the app, which is connected to your cane, which is on your phone. And it will tell you whether there's overhead obstacles coming up, which is super helpful if you're like me and I'm really tall and I always hit tree branches. And also you can set it so that it can give you an indication if you're approaching a tree or something at ground level as well, so super helpful. Yeah, and then we've got other things which, again, really, really helpful, like the MicroSpeak, which is a small portable recorder, great for making your shopping list if you're popping out to the shop, so you can record your shopping list, make sure you've got everything when you're going out to get those all important Christmas bits and pieces or gifts or whatever it is that you're doing. And then we also have the PenFriend, and the PenFriend has been around for a long time, but it's a voice labeling system, so you can stick labels on products in your cupboards, on your spices, for example, even labeling up your clothing if you're, you know, if you're like me and you're very particular and you like to make sure that you're not going to put pinks in with your whites, for example. And yeah, so it's super important. You can really label up as much, give as much information as you like on those labels, so you know exactly what you're doing around your kitchen or around your home as well.
Brilliant. And where is the best place for people to browse these products and get in touch if they've got any questions?
Definitely pop along and visit the online shop at shop.rnib.org.uk, or you can give the helpline a call as well on 0303 123 9999 as well.
Well, thank you so much, Claire Maxwell from the RNIB shop, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Time now on R&IB Tech Talk to talk gaming once again. I'm going to take a little look at some gaming highlights of some games that have been discovered in 2025. And, well, who to bring on than, of course, Mr. Sightless Combat. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Good to be back.
Yes, good to have you back. It's been a year of interesting games. Well, let's just dive straight into it. One of them, actually, me and you have recently talked about off the recorder, which I found quite interesting because these sorts of games don't often immediately strike me, but you kind of sold me on it a little bit. So tell me a little bit about The Art of Fauna.
Yeah, so Art of Fauna is a puzzle game for iOS, or at least I've played it on iOS. And it is a free base game with 10 puzzles that you can do for free. And then you have to pay for the rest of the puzzles. Now, the reason this is so interesting, though, is because, as you may be able to guess from the name, it is to do with conservation and animals and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very much a sort of environmentally, you know, conscious kind of puzzle game. The reason it's so interesting, though, is because it's fully accessible and flew completely under my radar when it sort of hit earlier this year. But I was pointed to it as a example of, you know, a fully accessible puzzle game, and I was very curious to see how that worked. And it turns out it's actually really well put together because you can actually play it as a sighted person as well. I know sighted people who've played it because I've spoken about it. And because visually you can match together a bunch of pieces of an image, but then you can also, even as a sighted player, you can also match the put together the paragraphs that make up the description of the animal in question. And so you have little fragments of, you know, the whole sentence that you put in an order. So you find the first one, you put that at the front, you then find the next one that links into it just by sort of deduction, and then you put that in, and then you keep going and going and going until the puzzle completes. And these are great because they're, of course, educational. You know, there's no time pressure as well, which is fantastic. And they're all fully readable with voiceover and everything as well. And there are, I think, 100 plus puzzles. And there's even a Halloween set, which I was like, how are they going to do Halloween for, you know, animals? And then I saw the first one, Tasmanian Devil. I was like, of course it is. So that was wonderful to see. And I believe elements of the funds go towards supporting conservation and stuff as well, which is always good to see. Always good to see, you know, the planet, you know, protecting the environment and stuff being a part of this as well, as, of course, the educational value. But it is arguably, I mean, the good thing is you can try the free puzzles. If you like the vibe of the game, you can pay, I think it was $8.99 I paid to get the rest of the puzzles, you know, all of the rest of the 100 plus puzzles that you can get, including a bunch of free ones that comes with as like a bonus.
Tasmanian Devil, do love the sound of that. That sounds very good. clever indeed. I wonder if they'll have a Christmas pack and if there's a reindeer somewhere there.
That wouldn't surprise me, actually. I wonder if they're going to do that at some point. If you don't want to see particular phobia-inducing animals, you can, I believe, customize that to a degree. There's a bunch of accessibility things that kind of appear when you first start the game, which is a first for a phone game, I think, in my experience. You get to sort of see like accessibility set up as part of the boot flow, which is great. And then, of course, there's the fact that you can do this visually, you can do this, you know, with voiceover on. So there's a lot, depending on, you know, what level of sight you have, there's a lot to like here. Well, regardless of what level of sight you have, there's a lot to like. So it's always good to see games in sort of unsuspecting genres, like unexpected genres, being accessible like that, where it's like, oh, puzzle game, how does that work? And then you go and look at it and it's like, this makes sense. So yeah, it's a fun, you know, light-hearted, cozy title that you can just sit and, you know, play as many or as few as you want. You can play it in short bursts. I've done it in car journeys, in terms of, you know, you'll grab a puzzle or two, do that, put your phone away, and then think, oh, I'll do another couple, you know, a little while later.
Quite a good thing to play with families at Christmas, I imagine, as well.
It could be, yeah. I mean, depending on how you'd want to do it. It's not designed as a multiplayer thing. It's very much designed as single player. You kind
of, if one person can read the puzzles.
Yeah, yeah, you could do that. You could sort of turn it into a multiplayer game in that respect. You'd have to work out a way to do that, but I'm sure that would be an interesting, fun challenge to do at Christmas.
Right then, so we've been to the animal kingdom, and now we're going to head to a kingdom of a different kind, slight variation, Hades 2.
Yeah, going very much from the animal kingdom to the kingdom of myths, legends, and all sorts of other fun things, specifically the sort of Greek side of things. For those of you that don't know, Hades 2, of course, the sequel to the much-loved Hades, a game that's come out on so many platforms, it's really quite difficult to list and keep track of. But Hades 1, of course, had its own accessibility mods way back when, though they were never as complete as people would have hoped because it didn't have narration. We'll come on to that in a second. But Hades 2, releasing in early access several years ago now, having early access modifications by Irumi321, a community member who was interested in putting that together, then has now released in full as of earlier in 2025 and has had mods updated by the wonderful Lirin, who has taken the time to update the existing work. And the game, with a few caveats and a few quirks, is now very much an accessibility powerhouse in terms of sitting there playing for ages, progressing and going through, because this is a roguelite. I always get roguelike and roguelites confused.
I'm the same.
Roguelike, so Rogue was an adventure from way, way, way back in the early days of computers. And the idea was you had to go through one run and that was it. And then you would start again. So roguelikes are very much these one run and then you start again kind of ideas, as far as I can remember. And then roguelite is where you make progression in between runs, so permanent progression. So let's say in one run you start with a sword, you go through all the way to the end, that sword is really powerful. In a roguelike, you would probably lose that sword at the end of the run and that would be it. But in a roguelite, you might be able to keep elements of, you know, if let's say you've spoken to an NPC halfway through, a non-player character, so like a man who's willing to help you in exchange for some gold, and he gives you an element that you can carry through to future runs to, I don't know, summon him again or whatever. That would be a roguelite, whereas in, as a roguelike, you would not be able to summon that person again in future unless you just happen to run into them in the next run. So Hades is very much in the roguelite side of things. You are going through, well, Hades 2 and Hades 1 as well. You are going through, you are unlocking ways of being stronger, more powerful, more diverse in how you play, different, you know, play styles as well with the weapons you wield, you know, meeting all sorts of new characters, you know, all kinds of things. And it's a very story heavy game as well, but not in the way you're thinking. It's not, here's a bunch of cutscenes and now here's a few seconds of gameplay, here's a bunch of cutscenes again. It's not like that, because all the interactions are, you know, you talk to NPCs, you hear information, you will find chambers or areas where, you know, you'll then be able to interact with new characters and be like, oh, I heard you were, you know, up here doing this. And then, you know, they might reappear later in a different place and you'll be able to have further interaction. So there are a lot of deep layered mechanics and systems and intriguing, you know, elements to it. I've cleared Hades 2, cleared meaning I've beaten the main boss in this instance several times now. I'm getting sort of over halfway through the game overall, and it's been a lot of fun. Now, that being said, there are a few caveats in terms of actually installing these mods. There is currently not a landing page to go to specifically for these mods, but I believe that's being worked on so that I can then give you a link to go and find where these mods are and install everything and instructions. Thankfully, the software that installs these mods is accessible, at least as of the time of recording this. And you will have to, of course, buy the game. So that is, of course, a barrier. But given how well these mods work overall and the fact that they're being updated to patch issues and things like menus not reading or mechanics not quite interacting with the mods as they should, that kind of thing. There is a lot to like about this in terms of, in comparison to Art of Fauna. Art of Fauna is very cozy and, you know, very peaceful and in your own time. Hades 2 is very much hectic. You are frantically progressing between runs. You are, having this narrative, all of this lore and narrative kind of thrown at you. But it is phenomenally put together. And even though it's a shame, of course, the accessibility wasn't built in by default, the fact that this has been put together by the community, and I've spent many hours in this. I know Lirin, the mod author, has apparently beaten the whole game pretty much. That speaks to the level at which these mods allow you to play this game that everybody has been kind of talking about, and it's very much featured in a lot of the awards seasons as well at the moment. So it's a very popular game, a very interesting game, relatively mature in terms of theming, but it is very much fun and different. It will be hard at first to get through, even like the first few rooms, but it is very much worth keeping an eye on and looking into. And I'm sure once the landing page is available in some fashion, we can disseminate that and maybe talk about the game in sort of a full detail explanation if people are interested in that.
So when it comes to platform availability, obviously Art of Fauna, we talked about iOS. What platforms is this game available on, and where can be played in an accessible fashion?
Yeah, so that's a key distinction. So Hades 2 is available on numerous platforms, but the only platform it's accessible on via these mods is PC. And I believe, I mean, I've only tested the Steam version of Hades 2, but it may be accessible on PC and other platforms as well, depending on how the mod manager that you use to install the mods tackles it.
You've picked us a title that you'd like to kind of give a bit of a look ahead in 2026. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I thought, even though we're looking at titles, of course, that we can play now, it's always good to keep an eye on the future and what might be coming up. And in 2026, as much as yes, Grand Theft Auto 6 is on everybody's minds and is going to be releasing on November 19th, and we don't know about the accessibility of that, what we have an interesting prospect of accessibility for is Insomniac Games' Marvel's Wolverine. Now, if you remember various discussions that I've had, various videos that I've put out over the past couple of years, you will have heard me talking about Marvel's Spider-Man 2. We're from the same developers. Now, Spider-Man 2 wasn't accessible at first. It then got an update, but it wasn't very accessible. There were bits there that were promising, but it wasn't a fantastically natively accessible experience. But it got an update in March of 2024 to add a bunch of things, including screen reader, navigational cues, that kind of thing in, or navigation assist rather, cues via the point of interest system. And that was the most accessible superhero game to date. I don't think that's necessarily a stretch to say that. Even though it wasn't perfect, it had its flaws. I've beaten it with minimal assistance to get through it, and it was fantastic. Now, because of the work that was done on Marvel Spider-Man 2, there is hope, beyond hope, arguably, that Marvel's Wolverine will have at least the same level of accessibility as Spider-Man 2, because, of course, games have been iterating, particularly on the Sony side of things. Games have been iterating on their various accessibility wins from previous iterations. I mean, look at Last of Us, part one, part two, and now, there is hope. Well, part two, then part one, if we want to be pedantic on the ordering, because they carried everything over to their respective remakes and remasters as they went through in the last few years. And then, of course, we've got Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet coming out in, probably a couple of years' time at this point from Naughty Dog. And that's going to be very interesting to see what accessibility is going to be carried through to that. But that's why we're excited about Wolverine next year, because if I have an accessible Wolverine game, you won't see me for a few weeks, or rather you will, but you will see me streaming it and being, saying, oh my goodness me, I'm able to play Wolverine, and fully engage with it, hopefully. So as much as it's not, oh, we can play this now, we know what's going to be in it, the fact of the matter is that hopefully we'll have information before launch, and hopefully that information will be, here's all these accessibility features that are going to be in it. But I am very excited, I know other people are as well, to see what comes of that. Also, as well, I know I didn't mention this in our discussions prior to recording this, but there is also a thing to look out for in the form of Valve's new hardware announcement. They've revealed the Steam Machine, the Steam Frame, and the new Steam Controller. Now, Steam, of course, has had its own accessibility improvements in the past, you know, few years or so, thankfully, including screen reader on SteamOS, which is apparently it works, but I've not been able to test it myself. I need to reset my Steam Deck to do that, which is its own complicated process. But in terms of the possibilities for the future, given there has been accessibility improvements to SteamOS, which the Steam Frame, the VR headset that they've put together, and the Steam Machine, a sort of console for the big screen, PC console hybrid for the big screen, I think is what they refer to it as. So basically, small box that runs all your Steam games, for lack of a better, a more complicated description. Given all of those Steam improvements, I'm very curious to see when that hardware releases next year, what happens in terms of, you know, the ease of setup without sight, ease of use without sight, whether that then motivates people to develop in VR for games without sight. If you give me a VR game that I can play on my own, I will be a lot fitter in a lot shorter time because I will be playing in VR and exercising and burning calories and things. And I think there are a lot of people who would use it for that, or just because VR is interesting.
There you go. That's your Christmas roundup for some gaming fun, if you'd like to. If you end up playing some good games over Christmas, obviously, do let us know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address, because we would love to hear from the gamers listening as well as everybody else. Right then, before we let you go, Santa's Combat, if you want to follow your gaming content, including what could come in 2026, how can they do that?
Yeah, if you want to find me and keep an eye on what I'm doing, what I'm streaming, including a playthrough I've started with sighted assistance of none other than Baldur's Gate 3, which is going to be an undertaking in itself, then you can do so. You can find me as Sightless Combat on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, etc., pretty much anywhere, as SIGHTLESSKOMBAT. You can, of course, find me at www.sightlesscombat.com in terms of my website, and email hello@sightlesscombat.com as well. And if you want to find out what RNIB is doing on the gaming front, you can email gaming@rnib.org.uk. And of course, if you want to know what RNIB is doing initiatives-wise, searching RNIB DFEG in your search engine of choice is probably a good place to start.
Marvellous. Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Sightless Combat, and we will see you to talk more gaming in 2026. Thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Indeed. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all.
And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. If you want to get in contact, it's your show, so please do. We always love to hear from you. You know that email address by now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Written emails or voice messages are always welcome. We'll be back with you, same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, and Hubert Bavalkovich, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.